and thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. This episode is presented by preaching minister Josh Yeager. Let's tune in now for Josh's message.
So for the last several weeks, we've been journeying with the Israelites through Exodus. And of course, we took a little break last week for Mother's Day. But we have been journeying with the Israelites through Exodus. And the main reason that we have been journeying with the Israelites through Exodus is because there's a major correlation between where the people of Israel were in Exodus and where we are, not simply as a church, but simply as Christians living today. Because just as the Israelites were between the promise and the fulfillment of the promise, we also are between the promise and the fulfillment of that promise when Jesus comes back and we go to heaven with him. And so we're in kind of this wilderness moment, just like the Israelites were. And they were facing a pivotal moment. They were facing an extremely pivotal moment where they had to choose between the familiarity of Egypt and the uncertainty of the wilderness. Have you ever had to choose between the familiarity of that which is just okay and maybe even possibly bad and uncertainty? If you've ever had to make that choice, you know that sometimes we just choose to stay in the not so good situation because it's familiar and we refuse to step into uncertainty. You see this in abusive relationships sometimes. When somebody who is in a relationship with a spouse or somebody and they should leave that situation, they should get out of it because it's abusive, it's hurtful, but it's familiar. And so they refuse to step into the uncertainty of being unconnected or not having a job or trying to rely on other people. They simply stay in the familiar situation even though it's not the best. And the Israelites are in that same place. They're choosing between that which is familiar and that which is uncertain, the wilderness. And Moses is very aware exactly of what is going on and the choice that has to be made. And he's very aware of how difficult it's going to be to take a people who are a group of slaves and move them to a place where they are a nation, and get them to think differently. And he thinks, I don't have what it takes. Just as we often think that we don't have what it takes when it comes from moving to what is familiar to what is uncertain. But here's the thing, God's answer is always the same. When he asks us to step into those uncertain places, when he asks us to take those steps of faith, God's answer is the same as it was to the Israelites, I will be with you. That's what he promises. I will be with you. I am all that you need. That is God's promise to us. And so how do we as a people live like God is with them? How do we live like God's with them? And we saw in the story that the Israelites kind of teach us what not to do, right? They teach us what we shouldn't do. First of all, don't sweat the details. Don't worry about all the details. Sometimes God only reveals the next step. He doesn't reveal 50 steps down the road. And sometimes we get all caught up in, well, what's it going to look like 50 steps down the road when all we can see is the next step? Sometimes we just got to take the next step. Don't sweat the details. Grab a hold of God's goal. He wants all the world to know him. That's why he does this whole thing with Exodus. And then stick to the plan. As Moses sticks to the plan, confidence grows in Moses and he becomes the leader that God envisions him to be. And we all have this choice. We have a choice. Are we going to obey the mission or are we going to disobey? And sometimes it's not even as blatant as that. Sometimes it's just, am I going to get there God's way or am I going to try to do it my way? I mean, maybe we have the same goal, but I want to do it my way and I don't want to follow God's way. Well, thankfully the Israelites, they obey. They obey somewhat through the plagues. And then they have this awesome time of worship in the wilderness. We talked about this. We unpacked this. And they engage in rituals. They engage in sacrifice. And they respond in sacrifice and ritual because they have been recreated. They have been made new. They were a group of slaves who were completely dependent upon their powerful enemy. And they were recreated to become a nation that God planned for them to be. And they respond this way because they must make this God known who could do such powerful things. You see, if humans don't respond, then God becomes unknown. And then while the praise is echoing off the rocks, they face these incredible tests. They have bitter water that they can't drink. Then they have no food. Then they have no water. And then they're attacked from the Amalekites on the outside. And they're called to trust God through all the difficulties and the hardships. And even though you're facing difficulties and hardships, we realize that that does not mean that God is absent. God was present through all of their hardships. Sometimes we think that God is gone when we're facing those difficulties. And then after the Amalekites are defeated, we find the first convert to Yahweh, the God of Israel, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law. He hears what went on in Egypt, and he goes to see for himself. And then Moses proclaims the good news to Jethro, to his father-in-law. And Jethro joins this fledgling community in worshiping God. And he says this, and this is powerful. He says, "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all other gods, for he did this to those who had treated Israel arrogantly." You see, God's purposes are being fulfilled through Jethro. Now, what I did just there, I went in about 5 minutes, I summed up everything that we've covered in about 5 or 6 messages. So if you missed any of those messages, if you want to dive a little deeper, you can always go to our website and listen to those or just refer somebody to that. Sometimes, I mean, these messages have a lot to do with where we're going. And so if you missed these, I want to encourage you to get on and listen to this. So this morning, we're going to pick up where we left off a couple weeks ago. We left off, and once again, Jethro is the central figure. But in this story, the roles are reversed from the previous story. Because remember, before, Moses is teaching Jethro. He's teaching Jethro about what God has done. But in this story, Jethro actually turns around and teaches Moses. And if you'll notice if you're taking notes, if you're in your bulletin, or if you've got your little note thing out, I entitled this sermon "Community." What I should have entitled it, and I ran to Joanne on Thursday afternoon. I said, "Joanne, you got to change the name because I want to change it. I want to rename it Leadership." Because as I was just looking at this finished message, I realized this isn't necessarily about just community. This is about leadership in community. And she's like, "Too late. It's already done." And so I was like, okay, too bad. So you can just kind of write in there, "Leadership in Community," because that's really what this message should be called. And when it comes to leadership, when it comes to the community, have you ever felt in an organization, whether it's a church or whether it's your job place or whatever, have you ever felt like, man, I just wish something would happen? Have you ever felt like that? I just wish, you know, I remember thinking that when I was a student at OC or even a student in my high school. I remember thinking, you know, they said they were going to do something about this and it's just so slow. I just wish something would happen. You know, maybe you've even felt that way about church. I just wish something would happen. I wish we could do something. I just feel like I'm running in place and I'm not sure which way to go. Have you ever felt that way? How many people felt like you just wish something would move, something would happen? Okay, but then on the other side, sometimes you have leaders who are sitting there and they're like, and you're doing this, and you're doing that, and you're doing this, and you're doing that, and you have all these people who are like, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, and you just don't feel like you have enough hands or enough brains to handle everything. Have you ever felt like that? Well, that's what this story that we're about to read, that's the situation that this story addresses. So I want you to listen to this story. We're going to read some pretty good chunks of scripture here this morning. Follow along on the screen, or you can get your Bible out or your mobile app or whatever if you like to follow that way. So we're going to be reading at Exodus chapter 18, starting in verse 13. The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge while all these people stand around you from morning until evening?" Moses answered him, "Because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions." Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you are doing is not good." So here's Jethro. Jethro is a leader. Okay, remember, he is a priest in Midian. He's been a priest in Midian. He's been a leader for a long time. He was a priest when Moses married his daughter, you know, many years ago. And Moses has a you know, full family now, probably with grown children at this point. So Jethro has been a priest of Midian for a long time. He's a leader. He's experienced with leading people. And he sees that something is not right about this situation that he witnesses with Moses and the people. And the problem is this: Moses is leading by himself. He's leading by himself. And I just want to make an observation at this point. And I think this is a powerful observation that I think we can maybe internalize a little bit. But the observation is this: God's redemptive activity does not respond to Israel's every need. You see, they're dealing with something. They're dealing with an issue. Moses sitting there judging in front of judging people all day long from morning until evening. And the people are just gathered around and they're milling around and waiting for his judgments. And, you know, the thing about it is that a lot of times many people who've experienced God's salvation are not given the answer to every single issue or problem that is faced by the community or by the individual. I mean, if you remember that moment when you became a Christian and you decided to follow Christ and, you know, you were baptized, the next morning you woke up and God didn't come and answer every single little issue and thing going on in your life. I mean, God doesn't do that. God's redemptive activity doesn't necessarily respond to Israel's every need. I mean, they're free, but their freedom brings these opportunities and these responsibilities and these challenges to face. I mean, God doesn't just come running, but Jethro is there. And his presence, in my opinion, is providential. And he sees Moses doing the work of leadership in isolation, and God says, or Jethro says, it's not good. You cannot be a leader in isolation. And here's why. Jethro even tells him, isolated leadership is not good. And he tells him why. Verse 18, you and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. So what's going to happen is Moses and the people are going to get worn out. And here's why. Because when everything relies upon the leader, this vicious cycle happens. Moses is doing everything. Therefore, nothing gets done without him. Therefore, everybody is waiting on him. But he has too much to do. So the people are getting worn out waiting. And Moses is getting worn out serving. I mean, it's a vicious cycle, and there's no end in sight. Moses, just like any leader any human leader is finite. He can only be in one place at one time. He only has so much energy in a day. He can only stay awake so much time in a day. And so there are a lot of needs that are left unmet, not the least of which are Moses' own needs. And not surprising, I mean, it's really not surprising that this is happening. Because like I said before, this is a community of slaves. They don't have any societal structures. They don't have any plans. You know, they don't have any hierarchy. It's just a community of slaves. And so Moses is leading these hundreds of thousands out of Egypt. And it's no surprise that there are just lots of disputes, lots of people not getting along. Because if you know anything about people, they don't get along. I mean, all you got to do is spend a little bit of time in a kindergarten class to know that. Just talking to some of our kindergarten, my wife tells me about PE and different things. So all you got to know, I mean, people just don't get along. But Jethro sees this and he points it out and then he makes a suggestion. Verse 19, he says, listen to me and I will give you some advice. And may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. Teach them his decrees and instructions and show them the way they are to live and how they are to behave. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. The simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. If you do this, and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain, and all these people will go home satisfied. So we see another reason that isolated leadership is not good, and that's because a leader has a specific job to do that no one else can do. You see, in this situation, if you look back in verse 19, and you can, if you have your Bible open, you can see this. Jethro says, you must be the people's representative before God. You have a job to do, Moses, that nobody else can do. You have a job to do that nobody else can do. A leader has a specific job that no one else can do. I want to make a second observation at this point, okay? So you can go back up. If you notice, I skipped that second observation. You can go back to it now. But this story is about justice in the community of God's people. You just got to point that out. And here's why this is so important, because here's the thing. God is a just God. He hands out justice. He rescues his people. He knows when salvation is needed. He knows when punishment is needed. He's a just God. So this story is about justice in the community of God's people. And Moses has had a long relationship with God. Therefore, he's the one who's most qualified to distribute justice in that community. But justice, what we see, is not simply the responsibility of the leader of Moses. Justice is the responsibility of the community as a whole. They must be a community of justice. But here's the thing. I think that this story, the implications are much deeper than simply justice. And let me see if I can explain this. So Moses has this unique relationship with God. He has specific abilities and specific talents and things that he is supposed to be doing, and they are getting squelched because he is doing something that other people are perfectly qualified to do. And so what we see is that when a leader covers himself up with doing what other people can do, nobody is satisfied. Nobody is satisfied. The people, because they're sitting here waiting around Moses and waiting, and they're like, come on, Moses, you got to get to me. It's my turn. They're waiting on Moses, and the leader is not satisfied because he or she is not doing what he or she has been called to do. And this is something that we see happen all the time in our world. When a leader covers themselves up with doing things that other people can do, And he gets so busy doing all those things, and he or she does not do what they have been called to do, what their specific abilities and talents have been given to them for them to do. And so Moses, he listens to his father-in-law, and look at what happens. Verse 24. Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. And so Moses frees himself up to do what he has been called to do, which is to represent the people before God. So I want to leave you with two final takeaways this morning. And that is this. A leader's job is twofold. A leader's job is twofold. First, leaders must teach, show, and release. Look at Jethro's advice again. Teach them, and that'll come back up in just a minute. Don't worry if you're trying to write that down. Teach them his decrees and instructions and show them the way that they are to live and how they are to behave, but select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. And so here we see that a leader's job is to teach, to show, and to release. Does that make you think of anybody? Does it make you think of anybody? Jesus. Yeah, I heard you. It makes you think of Jesus. What did he do? He came to this earth. He taught. He showed. And then he released. He let them go. I mean, he took 12 guys. He taught them. He showed them what it was like to live as a son of God. He showed them the way they should live. And then he released them and let them go. He let them go. That is a leader's job. Now, I can tell you this. If I was Jesus, I would have a hard time trusting me. How many people feel the same way? I would have a hard time trusting me if I was Jesus. Because you know something about you, and I know something about me. I know that I'm not trustworthy. I know that I make mistakes. I know that I'm not very smart sometimes. I just know all these things about me. I'm like, man, what? You know, how could I do this? But Jesus does this. The Son of God teaches, he shows, and he releases. He stays here for 3 years, and then he lets go. And he says, now it's your turn. Now I can guarantee you that none of those guys could do it as well as Jesus, right? None of those guys could preach as well as Jesus. None of those guys could perform the miracles. None of those guys could live the same life of faith as well as Jesus, yet he released them and let them go. A leader's job is to teach, show, and release. And the second part, to do what you have been called to do. Verse 19, listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. So teach, show, and release, and then do what you have been called to do. Because every leader has a unique place in God's plan. And what does a leader's job require? This is the second part of the takeaway. What does a leader's job require? First of all, it requires faith in God and in his people. This is what I hear so often that just drives me nuts. Well, we can't do that. Or we won't do that. Or people, we've tried that before. Or, you know, I mean, you just go on and on and on. People love to say, well, I know these people and it's not going to happen. I've been experienced, you know, I know it's not going to happen. I just want to say right now, let's erase that language out of our conversation. Let's not even use that. Because what you do is you immediately limit God and you say, I don't have faith that God can change somebody. I don't have, even though I know that this is what we are supposed to be doing, even though I know that this is what God has called us to do, we're not going to do that because I just know it. As soon as you say that, you defeat us. Leaders must have faith in God and in his people. And here's the thing that's so hard for leaders, because we look out and, you know, we're so much more qualified to do things than other people because, you know, we're leaders. And that's a very prideful stance, but leaders think that way. They think, man, I can do this way better. I can do it faster. I can do it more efficiently. And so, like, I can't release this. I just got to hold on to it. But leaders must have faith in God and his people. And I can guarantee you, there were some really poor judgments made by those Israelite leaders in those first few weeks or days or months. I'm sure they made some doozies of, I mean, I'm sure they messed up some lives even possibly. But here's the thing, you can't learn if you don't do. I mean, you can learn all of the theory in the world, but until you start to put it into practice, it doesn't make sense. I mean, it was so funny. The other day, I was looking for a book about a specific topic, and I was like, man, I found this book on Amazon, I was typing it out. I got a sample off of Amazon and was kind of started reading it, and I was like, that sounds really familiar. And I went over and I looked at my bookshelf, and there was the book. It was a book that I had read in grad school, but I didn't remember. I mean, all that stuff. It was all theory at the time. You don't put theory. You don't really truly learn until you start to do it. And leaders must have faith in God and in his people that God's going to do something in the people, and that God's going to accomplish his will. And the second part, what does the leader's job require? It requires people. It requires the people who are empowered to have unwavering commitment. You know, that was one of the big problems in the wilderness, right? Because they looked at Moses and they're like, yeah, Moses, he's a human being. He's just like, you know, me and you. Even though he talks to God and all that stuff, he's still a human being. And they didn't trust Moses. I mean, half the time, you know, they were like, where's our food? Where's our water? You know, God did all these amazing things. And they're like, what, Moses, Moses, Moses. And at one point, they were even going to stone him. So the other thing that it requires on the other side is it requires unwavering commitment and belief that God has placed the right people in the right positions to lead us in the direction that we need to go. And so this morning, I want to give you a chance to respond to this message. But this is not a traditional invitation, okay? Now, I remember those moments in sermons when I was a teenager sitting right where you guys are sitting. You know, I don't know why teenagers always sit in the front, but we always did. You know, we could never get away with anything in the front. I mean, I don't know why you sit in the front anyways. But we were sitting right here. I remember the preacher getting that tone of voice, you know, we're like, and if you want to respond, and, you know, come and be baptized. And I'd look at my friend and I'd say, 2-minute warning. And I'd be like, it's almost over. Okay, this is not that traditional invitation, okay? This is actually something that I want to empower you guys to do something. And we as leaders at 10th and Broad, we want to empower the church to do something. I mean, we saw this in our conversations. If you were part of the conversations, I mean, this came up over and over and over again that people were like, we're ready to go. We're ready to go. We're ready to do something. We don't know what to do. We're ready to go. We want to do something. And so I want to give you something to do. And every single person in this church, no matter how old you are, no matter how young you are, no matter how old you are, it doesn't matter. You can be involved in this. Because this summer, I mean, the elders and the staff have a huge job in front of them because we're wrestling with all the information that you've given us in these conversations. And so during this summer, we want to give you something to do. We don't want you to just sit on your hands and wait. So we want to give you something to do while we are wrestling with where God wants us to go. And we're calling it this: a summer for the city. A summer for the city. Just as Israelites were called to be a just community, and that justice was called to be part of their entire community. It wasn't just for Moses. It wasn't just for the leader to distribute the justice. So we are called to be salt and light in this world, right? I mean, Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, it is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. I don't want to be trampled underfoot. How many people want to be trampled underfoot? Nobody. We want to do something. We want to have something to show for what we've done. And he goes on and says, and you are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. In other words, people should know that you're here. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. You don't do that. You put it on its stand so that it gives light to everyone in the house. So everybody can see. And Jesus says, and just like that, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. We want to be salt and light in the city. And so we want to accomplish a summer for the city. So how are we going to do this? How are we going to get everybody involved? And this may sound rote, but I promise you it's not, okay? It's number one. This is all on your outline, okay? So you don't have to write this down. This is on your outline, in your notes. We put this, it's in there. First of all, we're going to have service projects going on throughout the summer at various times with various leaders. Now, I've already talked to many of you about this. I've already talked to many leaders. I've already talked to many people about leading something like this. We do have some firm dates. We have some firm dates for helping with Habitat for Humanity. We have 3 dates with them. We have 3 dates with Faith Refuge to go in and serve dinner, eat dinner with the women who are in the women's shelter of Faith Refuge, and then to do a worship service with them. We have 3 dates for that. There are things that are in the works. We're working on putting together a group for singing that will go around and just bless people's days. People who can't get out, can't come to church, or just looking to be blessed. We're gonna put together that. We're working on setting up dates with the food bank. We're working on doing something for the Wichita Falls Police Department. We're working on doing something for maybe gift bags like we've done in the past for Southern Hills and Wichita Christian School teachers. There's a lot of things that are in the works. And in a couple weeks, you're going to have complete schedule and dates, the project leader, and the number of volunteers that are needed for each project. And you also get a list of organizations that you, by yourself, without any connection to the church, you can just go and volunteer in. Because we have all kinds of nonprofit organizations in our town that are serving people, that are helping poverty and helping the homeless and helping different people, that all you have to do is just say, I'm here. I'm here. I mean, we don't have to start anything. We just have to go and be salt and light in our community. And here's what I want to tell you. There's no way you're going to be able to be part of every single one. There's just no way. So I just encourage you, pick 2 or 3 or 4 or however many you want to pick. I mean, just don't pick like multiples a week, but pick some and be salt and light in our community. And this is the second part. You can be a leader. You can be a leader. I mean, who knows better than you about the needs in your sphere of influence? Who knows better than you about what's going on in your job place? Or maybe there's an organization that you volunteer for regularly, like Meals on Wheels or Faith Mission or something like that. Who knows better than you what the needs are in your sphere of influence? And all you got to do is say, hey, I'm available. I can lead a group into my workplace. I can lead a group into this. I can lead a group into that. I can lead it. I can do it. I mean, just think about the conversations that that will lead to with people. You know, you may encounter people who are serving in those organizations who are not Christians. They just want to do something good for people. And just think about what the conversations are going to look like when you start to serve shoulder to shoulder. What are you doing? What are you doing here? I just love this city. I love people. I want to do something for this city. And you can share with them what's going on at church and invite them and say, look, we're trying to do something for this city. We're trying to be salt and light in this city. And here's a great problem that I want to have. I want too many ideas and I want too many leaders that we have to say, sorry, we got to put a halt on that. We'll just have to save that for next time. That's the problem I want to have, okay? I want to have that problem. And here's the thing, we have all kinds of organizations that need somebody to lead into them. So if you don't know what to lead, if you're like, man, I don't know what my workplace needs, we have some organizations that are serving people in our city. All we need is a point person to organize a team of T&B, 10th and Broad volunteers and step into that situation. I mean, we have groups from, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 to as many as 20. The food bank will take 100 volunteers, okay? So we have all kinds of opportunities, and if you need something to lead, we got some ideas. But I would love it if you can look at your sphere of influence and do something there. Because those are the people that you see every day. Those are the people that you interact with every day. Those are the places where salt and light is going to make a difference. A lot of times we can go and serve somewhere. We can go and serve, you know, one-time thing, and we only are only there when we serve, and we don't see those people ever again. That's not salt and light. That's just making my conscience feel better. Salt and light is a constant. It stays in the situation. It stays, you know, salt is seasons and it preserves and it makes it better, and it's because it's there. We're here to be salt and light. A third element that's going to be part of this is that there will be a time of prayer at 5 p.m. on Sunday nights at the church building. The reason, and obviously this will not be on Connection Group night, formerly known as Internet Group, okay? But on those nights when we don't have our connection groups, there's going to be a time of prayer here, and that's just for people who I know maybe you can't physically be part of some of these projects. Maybe you've already carved that time, that space out on your Sunday evening because you do your small group then, or you know that's just what you do. You can't physically be part of these projects, but and you're like, man, I need air conditioning, I need all these various things. We're going to meet together and we're going to pray for everything that's going on in our city. We're going to pray that the salt and the light that's going on, because we need to support this in prayer. And not only that, we may have a few simple projects like what we've done on Sunday nights in the past, where you can fill a gift bag, or you can write notes to people, or you can hand out food possibly to people in our neighborhood. We may have some little things like that to do on a Sunday night that you can do in an hour or hour and a half or something like that. But it will just be a time that we can support those who are going out. And finally, we're going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate being salt and light in this city. We're going to put a map of the city right out there in the atrium. We're going to, and every time you go into a place in our city, we're going to put a pin in that place. And we're going to celebrate touches. Because here's the thing. It's hard. I mean, if all you do is celebrate numbers in this building, if all you do is celebrate baptisms, sometimes that can get really frustrating, because sometimes it just doesn't happen, right? Sometimes, you know, you're just in a down moment or just a lot of people coming to Christ. But if we can celebrate the touches, if we can celebrate getting into the community and being salt and being light, even if maybe very little comes from it, I believe that we're going to create a culture that is going to be irresistible as we seek to be salt and light. And at the end of the summer, I want you to take lots of pictures when you're being salt and light out in this community. And we're going to have an end of the summer video to see how we have made a difference and what God has done through us. And guys, I believe something's going to happen. I believe that people are going to start seeing, okay, look at this church just loves the city. They're really walking. I mean, they're not just showing up and looking at their preacher. They're actually going out and doing stuff in the community. They're living out their faith out there. Because the reality is that salt and light is for the community. It's not just for the leaders. It's not just for the leaders. So if you can respond that way, do it this summer. In a few weeks, we're going to have a series of sermons. We're going to kick this off. And we're going to have all that list of things for you to do. If this week, if you're like, man, I want to be part of this, I know something that can be done, man, you get in touch with me or with somebody in the office. I mean, just call the church office, send me an email, do something, but say, I know something that we can do. I can lead something. Even if it's just two people, even if it's just you and two other people, that's fine. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how big it is. Just you and two other people being salt and light in this world. You don't need to do it through church resources. You don't need to wait until the church has planned, you know, I'm going to do that. You know, you don't have to wait for that. You just have to go and do it. Go and be salt and light. And if you can respond that way, please do it this week. Let's worship.